Good evening, everybody. My name is Ben Faber. I'm an alcoholic. And I'd like to thank Chet for coming down with me tonight. It makes it a lot easier when you got somebody else in the car to talk to, and instead of listening in my own head. I'd like to thank, I think it was probably about 20 people who welcomed me and made sure I knew everything about the meeting. And it's really cool to be in a meeting that's only 6 months old, however, is packed. You know, there's an obvious need for this type of a meeting in your guys' area, and it's cool to see that. My sobriety date is January 12th of 2001. My sponsor is a gentleman by the name of Larry T, and my home group is the Bellflower Big Book Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I guess I'll just start at the beginning. My mom had me when she was 16 years old, and she was a partier, a drinker, as our big book describes, a moderate drinker, a heavy drinker. She was either one of those. And when she had me, she decided to stop or moderate. And she has a glass of wine every once in a while now, and that's about it. Growing up, I just felt uncomfortable. I just feel terribly. I always want what you have. You know, I like your jacket, and I'm gonna get it. You know, and once I get it, I need the next thing, and it never fills that hole inside. When I was young, I always wanted to be named Mike for some reason. We would play cops and robbers or cowboys and Indians, and I go, call me Mike. Just call me Mike. And they'd always totally screw it up. I had a little brother, and they named him Mike. I always hated that little bastard. And that's just how I'm growing up. I'm terribly uncomfortable inside myself, and nothing is making me feel okay. My mom remarried and started having children with my stepfather, and he got a job opportunity to come down to California. I'm originally from Tacoma, Washington, and that's why I'm so fair-skinned. And I remember sitting at the dinner table, and we're having dinner like we always do, and he goes, hey, you want to move down to California with us? And I was like, yeah, let's go. And I was seeing myself with guest appearances on The Simpsons. I was going to be in some Lego commercials. Let's go. A couple months later, we moved down here. I got down here and I was horribly disappointed. Once again, uncomfortable inside myself. I moved down here in the early 90s. And in early 90s, there was the grunge scene in Seattle and Tacoma. And so I was wearing, cut-off flannels and cut-off jeans. And I come down here and everyone was, wearing Vans and playing Pogs and talking about going surfing. And I'm going, what's going on? I don't know how to do this. And what is a Pog? I felt uncomfortable. And that was when I started getting into fights. I never really won. I don't want you to think I'm some sort of tough guy or anything. I get one good hit in, though. just got to make that one count. I can't stand being me. I start doing all these things and becoming all these different people. On the way down, we were talking about, some of the phases that I went through. I was a punk rock kid. I was a basketball player, skateboarder. I was, anything I could change about my outside appearance, I would do in order to feel okay. Because I didn't know that there was something wrong with me inside that I could change. I was a good kid. I never really did any homework or anything like that, but I passed tests well, and so I just get by, and I got into leadership in junior high, and I basically topped out in junior high. I got into that leadership class, and I was like, I made it, and stopped doing anything, and got kicked out shortly after, I barely graduated junior high, and you don't hear that very often. You've been here, barely graduated high school, but I guess it's just that bad. And after junior high, I was hanging out with some friends, and we were waiting all night. We had somebody pick us up a few 40s of Mickey's, and I drank these two 40s of Mickey's, and it was about 10:50. I had to be home at 11. And I drink these 40s real quick, and I start running home, and it just, the sky seemed bluer. I felt comfortable for the first time in my life. I was able to take that sigh of relief. I knew that alcohol was going to be a big part of my life. And I didn't start drinking continuously right away. It took a couple weeks. And we find that thing that works for us, and we just go off. And I knew that alcohol was the only thing that made me feel all right, and I wanted to do it all the time. And I went into regular high school, wasn't doing anything, and about after a semester, I was, I had to go into independent studies, and alcohol had already become kind of a really important part of my life, and I was offered to go to Modern Day, which is a private school in Orange County, and my aunt offered to pay for me to go there, and I thought, oh no, it's all right. I know they drug test, and I'll just go to my little independent study class, which is basically like you go to school for a half an hour, you get your little packet, and then you go home, and I would just sit in my room, do my little packets, and smoke weed and drink all day. And if I could still do that, I think you'd have somebody else here tonight. And, because I had it made, and I loved it, and and that went on for a few years. I didn't get much trouble. I was always good about keeping secrets and just keeping under the radar, so I wouldn't get in any trouble. And because it'd always be my friends. They were always the ones getting in trouble, and if I could just not be like them, it was going to be okay. And my mom didn't find anything out, as I mentioned, I was a punk rock kid, and I cut my pants up and sew them back together, and my mom hated that, and and I would sleep in the gutters, although I had a nice warm bed to go home to that night, and I just thought it was cool to be a loser, and I did a pretty good job of accomplishing that, and as I mentioned, everything was fine for a while. I didn't get in much trouble. Basically, what happened was it was 4th of July, and I was going to try some acid, and I took this hit of acid, and I thought it wasn't working, so I took 30-some-odd shots of various different types of alcohol, I went home that night, and normally I run upstairs, good night, Mom, brush my teeth, and go right to bed. And for whatever reason, I had a little extra amount of confidence that night. And I walk in there, and hey, Mom, how's it going? How was your 4th of July? And she goes, come here. And I walk over to her. She goes, blow on my face. And I'm like, and. She goes, you've been drinking, haven't you? She takes me over to my friend's house. And my mom is like, she's that type of mom where she's everybody's mom. I learned very early on not to bring any friends over because she was going to embarrass you. And, we would, I'm a little kid. I'd be playing, hide and go seek or something. My mom would be over, he's under there. And, just killing all the fun. And, she brought me over to my friend's house, and she starts yelling at all my friends, he's never coming over here again. And all my friends are standing down this staircase, and they're just like, whatever, just get out of here. And my good friends, and I left there, and that was basically the beginning of the end. My first sponsor tells me that we drink for as long as we can, and then we drink for about 8 months after that, and that's pretty much exactly what I did. And I started, it was just a continuous trouble after trouble after trouble. every year, two times a year, I would go back up to Washington and visit my real father. And I'm the spitting image of my real father. I'm exactly like my real father. He never displayed any anger and any violence in front of me. But somehow I got that same exact thing. He never displayed that alcoholism the way that I had known it. But somehow I got that same thing. And, and I was just exactly like him. And, I remember by this time he had become my drinking buddy, and, you know, and we'd be up all night drinking. And he'd always get stuck on these things. Like, he'd go, "Ben, you're going to be a comedian." I go, "No, I don't want to be a comedian." And, you know, and he would just, "No, you're going to be a comedian." I'm like, "Nah." One night we drank a case of Budweiser or something, and then we still wanted a drink, and so I drank a bottle of Thunderbird, and I woke up, and I had the worst hangover that I'd ever had in my life, and I couldn't move, my eyes were burning, and I just lay in there, and he goes "Here," and I started drinking in the morning, and started taking that hangover away, While I was in Washington that time, my grandmother came over and she had heard I'd been drinking. She puts me into her car and she says, "Ben, you're going to be just like your dad. You're going to be just like your grandfather. If you don't stop doing these things, you're going to end up just like that. You're going to be a loser." You know, and the first time I'd ever heard anything like that. And I'm sitting in the car and I'm just saying, you know, "No, you don't understand. This is the only thing that makes me feel okay. It's the only thing that makes me, that allows me to take that sigh of relief and live inside my own skin." I didn't say that. I said, "All right, I'll stop." But, I wanted to say that, I think. And I went back, you know, came back home, and my grandmother had told my mom that I'd been drinking, and she knew that there were some problems, so she took us to family counseling. By this time, my stepfather was over it, and it was just my mother and I, and we're sitting in family counseling, and the counselor would look at me, "What do you need from your mom?" You know, I go, "Well, she never buys me any clothes," and she goes, "Why don't you buy him some clothes?" And we only went to one family counseling session, and my mom's no idiot, and I went back to regular high school. I was able to get my grades back up, and I went back into regular high school, and as I told you, I'm drinking in the mornings, and I would get to school, and I'd be shaking, and I'd feel like everybody's staring at me. I got this huge hole inside my gut, and I just got to leave. And I went to class a couple times that semester to sleep, and I just started getting arrested. I got arrested at school for possession, and I went into this youth shelter, and I'm going in and out of these youth shelters, and I can always get people on my side. I'm always talking to the counselor, and I can get them on my side. And, you know, they'd be telling my mom, "You know, you're doing this wrong. Why don't you change this?" And you know, he'd be okay. And, you know, I can't do that to alcoholics, though. And I get out of this place, and I've, you know, been sober or not drinking for a couple weeks. And I get out, and I'm like, I'm going to stay sober. I'm not going to drink. I'm going to get it all together. I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to get good grades. I'm going to, make my mom proud of me. That's all I ever wanted, was my parents to be proud of me. You know, I just wanted to be a good kid. And I'd always screw it up. And I went to school that morning. I went to my zero period class, and I got out of that class. And I'm walking to my next class. My friend Jeff comes up to me and says, "Hey, you want to get out of here?" And I was like, no, you know. And he goes, "What? Tim just got a bottle of Jack Daniels and a new bong." And, I'm like, "Well, I'll start tomorrow," you know. And that's exactly what I did every day. It was, you know, "I'll start tomorrow. I'll start tomorrow. Tomorrow's the day." And, you know, and the tomorrow never came. And November of that year, I got arrested again. And my mom started getting the calls that I wasn't showing up to school. I was coming home from school, and we get into a fight one more time, and finally I just didn't have much fight left in me, and I just said that, you know, "I got a problem with drinking and I can't stop." And you know, and I don't know where those words came from. I don't know what, you know, I wanted to be right. I always wanted to be right, and I don't know where that came from. And she goes, "All right, well, we'll get you some help." And she puts me into this outpatient place, and I'm going to school, and then I'm going to this outpatient place, and I really want to stop drinking. I just want to be that normal kid, and I go to school, and sometimes I'd be able to last all day long. You know, I'd be able to not drink or do anything else all day long. I would go home, and I'd be tossing and turning in bed at night, and I would get that bottle of NyQuil. I'd drink that bottle of NyQuil and be able to fall asleep. You know, and some days it was less. But after about 2 weeks, they said my drug alcohol level was higher than when I'd come in. And either I needed to stop or I needed to leave. And I knew I wasn't going to be able to stop, so I just left. And I ran away. I stole some money from my parents. I'm living in a shed in my friend's backyard and drinking a fifth of Jack Daniels every day. And, you know, and after about a couple of weeks, I blacked out and got arrested coming out of a Hollywood video with a video stuffed under my jacket and didn't know what was going on. And I came to as the buzzers are going off, and I was like, well, I'll just keep walking. And, you know, and they come outside, they shuffle me back in, and they call the police, and the police come, and, you know, they call my parents, and my mom comes to pick me up, and it's midnight by now, and my mom's driving me all over. She takes me to this place to, she thinks I have alcohol poisoning, you know, and on the way home, you know, I'm sitting in the car next to her, and she just starts crying, and she says, "Ben, I can't do this anymore. If you want to live your life like that, you're going to have to do it somewhere else." You know, every time I hear the phone ring, I think the cops got you. Every time I hear the sirens, I think I'm going to have to come identify your body. I don't want to live like this anymore. You know, and I never wanted to make my mom feel that way. I always wanted to be that good kid. But I can't do it because of this alcoholism. And, you know, the next day I get into a fist fight with my dad. There was a restraining order over Christmas. And I was staying at a friend's house. And my mom called me Christmas morning. You know, and I'd just woken up. And she goes, "Ben, why don't you come over and open some presents and we'll have some breakfast." You know, and I hadn't been drinking yet that morning because I had just woken up. I went straight over, and when you get me when I'm not drinking, I'm angry, and you say the wrong thing, and I'm going to hurt you. You know, and she either didn't give me what I wanted or didn't say what I wanted to hear, and I started breaking things in her house and pushing her around. And she called the police one more time, and the police came, and they said, "Just get the hell out of here, kid. You don't belong here." And, you know, and I left there, and I went to this grocery store, and I stole two tall boys and Mickeys. And I went and I sat behind this abandoned Goodwill on this abandoned couch, and I drank these two tall boys, and I just wanted to take that sigh of relief. I just wanted to be able to say everything was going to be all right. I just wanted to be able to say, screw it all. It doesn't matter. It's all going to work out. And you know, and I take these two, and I, for whatever reason, it didn't do what I needed it to do. And you know, and I don't know what to do with my life because my best friend alcohol is not even working anymore. And, you know, and that was my bottom. It was Christmas Day of 2000. And a couple weeks, I was in this youth shelter for a while and convinced some people to leave with me. And we all got drunk and they got arrested and I ran away. And but then, you know, the social services stepped in and said, you're going to have to go to an inpatient place or we're taking you to Orangewood, which is like a... I always forget what the word is for it, but we're bad kids who parents don't want them anymore. and I was there. They said, hey, I had to go to an inpatient place. And January 12th of 2001, I walked into this place in the city of Orange. And told me to get a sponsor and start going to these meetings. And I thought that I had been to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I had gone to these meetings and I'd look at the steps on the wall and go, all right, got that one done. Oh, that fourth step, I'll do that later. And I go to another meeting and I'd talk to some guy and he'd have some ungodly amount of time, like 30 days or something. Go outside with him, and I was talking to this one guy in particular one time, and after about a half hour conversation, he goes, if you ever drink again, I will kill you. And I was like, all right, I'm staying sober. And, you know, and I left, you know, I left the meeting and I, you know, I had to say goodbye to my friends. So, but it didn't last long. But, you know, so I thought I had tried Alcoholics Anonymous. We start going to these meetings and you know, and I was relating to your share because I was angry and vicious. I remember there was a girl who was leading this meeting and she goes, and I've asked Ben to read a portion of chapter 5. And I went, screw you! Ran out of the room. And, you know, and I just, holes all in the wall. You know, my anger was just out of control. And because I had so many secrets kept inside. And after about a month and a half, they started telling me to get a sponsor. And I started looking around and we were going to these meetings and I would talk to this guy and he'd go, you know, I got too many in my life. And, or I just got my kids back. Or, you know, I don't have enough time for you. And, you know, and I was like, what's going on? What a rejection. And, you know, I was talking to this woman, Patty O. And she goes, why don't you ask that guy right there? And as I was telling her this, you know, what was going on, this guy was leaving. And I walk outside and he was two steps below me and he's 6 inches shorter than me. But for whatever reason, he felt taller than me that night. You know, and I walked up to him and I said, hey, will you be my sponsor? He said, are you willing to do whatever it takes for victory over alcohol? He didn't give me one of those answers, you know, hey, call me tomorrow or, why don't you meet me here? He said, are you willing to do whatever it takes? Whatever I ask you to do, are you willing to do it? And I was tired of the way I felt. I said, I'll do whatever you want me to do. You know, and he started taking me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he had me start relating with some of the things that happened in here. And he had me find myself in there. And in the doctor's opinion, it talks about classification of alcoholics. And I always thought it was the manic depressive type, you know, which a whole chapter could be written. And I just wanted a chapter written about me. And, you know, and later on, I realized that it sounds so bad, but I was the psychopath. I'm always going on the wagon for keeps. I make many resolutions, but never any decisions. That's that day. I'll start tomorrow. And, you know, and I kept going through that book. And because he went through it with me, I was able to relate with, a stockbroker in the 1920s and 30s. I would read it by myself and I'd think, how can I relate to that? And, you know, he took me through it and he goes, look at this example. You know, and I did the same things exact, you know, with my mom or at school or at, you know, I did the same exact things in a different situation. And, I started to believe that I was an alcoholic. And, and being young in Alcoholics Anonymous, I got sober at 16 years old, so it was a little difficult at times. You know, my head would get a hold of it and it would say, you know, hey, you know, maybe you're a little too young. Or, hey, you know, maybe it was just a phase. Or, you know, just say anything. And, or I would just say, why don't you hit that guy? And, anything to get me out of here. My head just does not want me here. And, and after about a year and a half, I'm sitting in my home group my old home group. This guy was sitting next to me. He was an older gentleman. He goes, aren't you a little too young to be here? You know, I'm like, you don't know me, you son of a bitch. And, I left that meeting and I get this book and I'm going to find something to throw in his face. I get my ink pen out and I'm underlining everything. Okay, that's it. You know, and I come across this in chapter 3 where it talks about, it starts talking about young people. And it starts talking about, it basically says, there were those of us who were in the same position after only 3 years or a few years that those of us who are in the same position or that position after 20 years. And I thought, holy crap, that's me. You know, and I start underlining it. And it says, this is particularly true of the woman alcoholic. And I was like, oh. You know, but I've accepted it. And now I embrace it. But for whatever reason, that was enough for me. There was no battle inside my head anymore. There was no doubt whether I was too young or maybe it was a phase. There was none of that. I know that I'm an alcoholic. That doesn't mean that I'm not going to drink again. It means I know that I'm not going to drink one beer. But it also allowed me the willingness to do the rest of the things in Alcoholics Anonymous that we're supposed to do. And while I was in that treatment center, I did that fourth step and did that fifth step. And actually, Chet and I were talking before the meeting, and I always feel cheated when I do a fifth step with somebody because I had so much good stuff in there. And, I'm listening, this is so boring. And, is there anything else? But, I did that fifth step, and I just felt so much freedom. I just felt so much, just weight lifted off of me. And I got kicked out of that treatment center about 5 months because I couldn't stay away from the girls. And I one more time, I'm at a fork in the road, and it's either go to Arizona for this place until I'm 18 years old, or I'm going into sober living. And my sponsor and this other woman convinced my parents to put me into sober living. And I go into this sober living home, and I'm 17 years old now, and I'm living with a bunch of 40-year-old men, and I just wanted this thing so bad that I didn't care. I didn't care about any of it. I did everything my sponsor asked me to do. I didn't always tell him everything right away, but once I told him, I did what he asked me to do. I got out of that place, and I'm in sober living. My sponsor keeps taking me through those steps, and I get to that ninth step, and he has me make amends with my mom. And as I told you before, I want my mom to love me. I want to have that affection with my mom. And and because of that amends, my mom and I are best friends today. We talk all the time, and there were certain things that I just didn't understand because I'm a selfish, self-centered person. I don't understand like taking the trash out when I visit their house. I don't understand doing little things. I can't do. I'm concentrated on what I'm gonna get, and people would start telling me to do these little things. And there was this woman that at that Wednesday night meeting that I was telling you about that she was an Al-Anon. And I would always go up to her, and she'd always kiss me on the cheek and tell me she loved me. And I thought, maybe I'll just bring that home with me. And I'd go to my mom's house, and I'd kiss her on the cheek and tell her I loved her. And our relationship just grew from there. It kept growing. Now every time her friends or, friends' children or whatever have a problem, she gives them her little 12-steppers number. And I swear that's what she calls me. I go, Mom. But my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous has been amazing. After that first few amends, I had been amazed before I was halfway through, I guess, and didn't make any more amends for another couple of years. But, and after that couple of years, I started going through the Big Book again with some people, and we thoroughly went through it until I understood everything, because I'm kind of retarded. So we're going through these amends, and I'm starting to have all these problems, and I'll go to the literature table, and I'm going to pick up some piece of literature and go, oh, hey, maybe that's it. Maybe that'll fix me. And then I'll pick up the pamphlet on sponsorship. Oh, he's not doing that. I'm just reaching outside to find something to make me feel okay again. I don't want to have to like go drive somewhere and talk to people I don't want to talk to. I want to read something and then, have this overwhelming warmth come over me. And it just wasn't happening anymore. At that 2.5 years, this guy Keon comes up to me and he goes, as soon as I started making financial amends, my financial life got better. Once I started making relationship amends, my relationships got better. And I was like, all right. And I went out and I made like 10 amends that week. And I had them finished within a month and a half. And all the whole time I'm telling myself, oh, I can't find them. I don't have the money. But I started making completed those amends within, a couple months. And, uh, You know, I would do them. I'd write a list of, you know, all the 7-Elevens, all the liquor stores, all the grocery stores, all the, you know, and I would do all the grocery stores at one time and all the liquor stores at one time, and then I was doing all the 7-Elevens all up and down Westminster Boulevard, and I was on my last one, and I was gonna go to my meeting after that, and I walk in and I'm feeling good because I've made a bunch already, and I walk in and I got $10 in my hand, and I walk up to the guy as soon as the line dies down. I go, "Hey, I stole 2 packs of cigarettes from you 2 years ago, and I need to pay you back." And he goes, "What? Oh, you want 2 packs of cigarettes?" Okay. I go, "Oh, no. I stole 2 packs of cigarettes, and I need to pay you back." He goes, "What? You stole from my store? You get out of here!" I was like, "You want your money?" And while I was making the amend, this guy came in and he was standing behind me. I looked behind me and he goes, "Don't worry about it. You did your part." I was like, "Holy crap, you bastards are everywhere." So I left that store and I experienced true freedom. You know, there was no place, well, I was just about to say there was no place I couldn't go, but I can't go back to that 7-Eleven, and I have. But every amends where I wasn't able to pay somebody back or do something for that person, I did something for somebody else. You know, and there's a first step house, a detox in Costa Mesa where I live, and I would always, if I couldn't pay somebody back or a store had closed down or whatever, I would buy some cigarettes or buy some shoes or whatever, and I'd bring them over there and give them to the person who had the worst looking feet. I experienced that freedom. You know, and I caught fire for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started doing things here that I never thought I would do. And I was going all over the place, hanging out with friends, and and getting tight with people that I never thought. I mean, Chet and I would come from two totally different places, but we're good friends. You know, and there are plenty of people who I never thought I would associate with in any sort of way, but we're the closest friends. There was a guy when I was new, his name was Chuck. When I was new, I didn't have very many social skills. I had probably one, it was a one question, and then I would two questions. And it was, "How are you?" Okay. And it was, "How long are you sober?" "Oh, 30 years." Okay. And after a while, after a couple of months, they would grab me, start talking to me. And there was this guy, Chuck, and I'd go up to him and say, "How you doing, Chuck?" And I would go, "Better than I deserve." I go, "Okay." And I kept doing it. I started getting angry at him. I remember one time he goes, "How you doing?" "Well, not as good as I deserve." And finally, after a couple months of this, I one more time I ask him, and I go, what do you mean by that? What does that mean? I don't get it. You're a lawyer. You've worked hard. You have a good life. Like you've done a lot to accomplish these things. What do you mean by that?" He goes, "For all the bad things I've done, people I've hurt, mistakes I've made, my life is better than I deserve." And I believe that today. I do not deserve the life that I have. I'm 23 years old, and I never thought I was. I didn't even want to think about being 23 because I knew it was going to be bad. My life is amazing. I've had experiences that most people can't even say that they have. We get to have these experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous that people don't get to have. You know, I see. Old people live longer than most people out there because there's so much love in these rooms, you know. And I'm just so glad to be a part of something like this. Time went on, my life is really good. After about 4 years, I started getting credit cards and stuff and wanted to, build some credit, and I got one too many and couldn't pay him. And you know, and all these lessons I've learned, you know, it's just one after the other, and you know, and I'm continuing to learn. I hope that I never think that I've learned everything that I could possibly learn, and because I, you know, then I can't sit in here with you. And you know, there I was working at this job in Huntington Beach, where my parents live, and every day for lunch, I would go over to my parents' house, and I started, you know, trying to, you know, continue to build that relationship, and we would, you know, my mom and I would have lunch, and I have a 2-year-old little brother, and all my little brothers and sisters, I have seven, and I've never been nice to any of them, because I always wanted to be an only child, and they're all screwing it up for me, and I started going over there, and I started reading to that little boy, and I never did any of those things, and I would read to him every day, and after a couple months of that, I remember got done reading, I had to go back to work, and walking out the door, and he runs up to me, and he starts crying, and he goes, "Don't leave." He didn't want me to leave. I would have never gotten to experience that. I'm always being asked to leave, and he wants me to stay, and I'm so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're new tonight, I hope you find the gratitude that I've found. I hope that you give yourself to Alcoholics Anonymous and do what the men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous do around here, and you'll be all right. Thanks.